right. Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Office Hours. I am your host, Daniel Pink, broadcasting from our state-of-the-art studio here in United States Capitol, Washington, D.C. We are here. I'm going to explain to you how Office Hours works as soon as I get away from the control panel here. So here's how Office Hours works. On each program, we open the phone lines for an hour, and then I, accompanied by a special guest, will take your questions, questions about work, business, life, management, education, creativity, productivity, sports, romance, food, wine, lawn care, pet care, plane geometry, anything you want. If you have questions, we have answers, and when we don't have answers, we'll make something up. And today we've got an awesome guest, truly awesome guest, a man whose work has helped me immeasurably over the years, David Allen. David, welcome to this program.
Daniel, absolutely thrilled to be here. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the program, and let me say welcome to the future of radio. we're glad to have you here. Now, for those who don't know who David is, a brief introduction. David is the smartest productivity guru in the world. Hands down, it's not even close. He created a system called Getting Things Done that has swept the planet and boosted the productivity and performance of, no joke, hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people. His book, Getting Things Done, has been a mega bestseller year in and year out. Time magazine called it, and I'm quoting here, the defining self-help book of its time. Now, some personal background. I heard about David maybe 15 years ago. Fast Company magazine had just done a story on him. And somebody I knew had just returned from one of his seminars. And she said to me, you've got to do this. You've got to listen to this. You've got to get this into your system. You've got to understand what he's talking about. And she said it with the urgency that you'd typically associate with, a heroin addict or a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman. And she was so insistent, I went out and I got a set of cassette tapes. Now, for those of you under 30, you can just go to Wikipedia and look up cassette tapes to find out what that is. And I listened to those tapes, and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, my life changed. I had inboxes, which I'd never had before. I had a someday maybe list. I started doing the weekly review. I did the two-minute drill. And, of course, like all right-thinking human beings, I bought a labeler. It was huge. So for that, David Allen, thank you, and welcome to Office Hours.
Gee, you're easy.
tell us where in the world you are right now.
I am in an absolutely gorgeous place, the fifth floor of a lovely hotel in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. Just arrived here. It's an absolutely gorgeous afternoon. The sun is shining. I am waiting till we finish our phone call to go down and walk around with my wife and have a beer, which one must do immediately. But I haven't had time to do that because I'm on the phone with you. But
well, that's all right. We try to discourage drinking before office hours. but maybe that actually could liven things up, David. We should think about that.
It's 5 o'clock. It's the yard. It's the sun is over the yardarm here, guy. It is 5:00 something. 5:08 is my time.
Okay, well, that's good. It's 5:08 in Amsterdam. It's only 11:08 here in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, where it's an equally beautiful day, I think, for once in our life. And I'm sure many people here are drinking already. At least let's hope so. And I promise, I just want to say for all of our listeners here, even though we're broadcasting from Washington, D.C., I promised my wife that I would not do any Anthony Weiner jokes for the entire hour. So we just lost 100 listeners after hearing that. What a shame. Anyway, David, welcome to Office Hours. Are you ready to take some questions? Remember, this is how it works, guys. This is how it works. What we do is this is not like a regular radio show where we have an elite core of producers who screen calls, so everything is smooth and pureed. Our broadcast is zesty and chunky. And so what we do is we just take whoever comes in. It's office hours. So whoever walks in, we do it. So here's what you have to do, listeners out there around the world. And we do literally have people from around the world today, which is very, very cool. So folks, if you want to ask a question to David or to me or just to the world, here's what you have to do, all you listeners out there. Press star 2. That's star two. Only if you have a question. On our last episode, our first caller was, I said to somebody, David, Fred from Charlottesville, you're on the air. And Fred said, huh? I thought you said to press star two. Fred had no question. I don't even think he was in the right place. So press star two if you have a question. That's a way for you to raise your hand. We'll be able to see you here on our control panel. And what I'll do is I'll say your name. I'll say, Mary in Sheboygan. Or if I don't see your first name on our control panel, I'll say your location. And you can ask away. So again, anything you want, you can just ask away. So David, you ready to go to the phones?
This is a little edgy, but I've girded my loins and I'm ready.
All right, the girded loins. Now, fortunately, I just to say, as David, as you know, I'm trained as a lawyer, and I should say that loin girding is fully legal in Amsterdam. All right, it's actually a misdemeanor here in Washington D.C.
I've seen six people already with girded loins this afternoon.
Really?
I know I'm cool.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I think that
clear.
I mean you're on Twitter as at GTD guy. I think it's time for a twit pick of those girded loins. And now here is where one would typically introduce an Anthony Weiner joke, but showing my incredible constraints and my incredible self-discipline, I'm not. Let's open up the phone lines here, David, and we're going to go to I don't have a name here, but I have a place. It's actually a beautiful place. You've probably been there before, David. Bainbridge Island, Washington. So Bainbridge Island, Washington. You're on the air with David Allen. What's your question?
Hi, my name's Keith.
Hey, Keith.
And my question is, first of all, I love David's system, ideas, writings, all that stuff. I think it's terrific. I'm one of those people who needs it badly. I recognize that, and I'm trying. My question
but
is...
But! I sense a big but coming through the door here.
Well, it's really a point of clarification or discussion, I guess. When things weren't as complex as they are today, the tools doesn't matter comment was reasonable. To me, it no longer seems reasonable. So the question is, if I say that's not defensible anymore, why am I wrong?
Okay, let's unpack that a little bit, because you have to have a green belt or a brown belt in GTD to understand the context of that. So, David, why don't you explain sort of the premise of the question and then talk to him?
Sure. Well, a lot of the fundamentals of what I synthesized and pulled together was understanding that a lot of what you need to keep track of is commitments with yourself and with other people. And most people have made a whole lot more of those than they realize. And if you're going to keep track of that, the place not to keep track of it is in your psyche. You need a system. So you need some external form to keep track of the projects and the actions and your goals and, all that other stuff, all that stuff that sits inside of you. You need to get it outside of you. And you need to have a good tool to do that. And so, Keith, I know, understand what you're getting at. That is that, look, it used to be that you could use paper, you could use Post-its or whatever, and any of that would work, but now the world seems to be coming at us really fast and very complex, and so having a great tool to be able to manage lists, if you will, and maybe a lot of other things, seems to be more and more necessary. So if I understand your question, I would say, yes and no, because the truth is, I'm running across a lot of very high-tech people these days that are going back to paper, because paper is actually a better way to track a lot of the complexity of the relationship of stuff in your head. I just ran across, actually, a very good friend of mine, I don't know if he's on the phone, Randy Harward, who's head of quality control at Patagonia. Randy travels around the world all the time because he's there, looking for factories that Patagonia works with and so forth. And Randy is a big fan of my stuff, has been for years. His wife works in our company. And Randy carries a loose leaf planner with Post-its stuck in them. And because he just found moving fast and not necessarily being connected all the time, he found that was the best way to manage a very, very complex, very fast moving kind of way to travel. So I think that in a way, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you have a tool, you'll work. And I understand, that the computers can be, a lot sexier and faster and can then connect you to a lot of stuff. But boy, the computer is a dangerous animal. Because out of sight, out of mind. And a computer screen, and certainly not a PDA screen, cannot give you the context of relationships of all of your stuff that you need to be able to see.
Can I make one follow-up comment?
Yeah, Keith, go ahead.
So I understand all that, and I agree. I agree that paper probably should be a part of the system. But if you take the whole trusted system together, it seems to me that you actually have to change. There has to be one slight new insight that's that comes from the ability to use a database rather than just paper lists. And that is that when the trusted system gets really big and really kind of spread out in terms of the different kinds of lists that could be relevant, what you need to do is manage tasks in the system and then generate lists when you need them rather than actually manage lists.
I understand what you're saying, and I think that probably works if you have something that can work that as fast as you need to work it. The problem is that most systems that tried to do GTD over-complexified them. They tried to over-automate them and make it. The problem was that you had to think too much to then use the system. And GTD is this very thin little edge. It's got to be just structured enough. But if you make it too structured, where you have to think too much to insert, you won't do it when you're moving too fast.
The other Keith, thanks for your call. I want to repeat the instructions for asking a question because I'm following the Twitter stream here, and it looks like we have people have questions. But all you have to do if you have a question is hit star two, and your hand will be raised. I saw a Twitter feed from somebody. In Holland, who has a question, and he says that he pressed star two, but I don't see him. I don't see Holland on the board here. So if you are Twitter named Solingen, press star two again and line up here. So star two to ask a question of David Allen. What that does is on our elite state-of-the-art control board here in Washington, D.C., the pulsating nerve center that is my garage, we see essentially a virtual hand raised, and we just go and ask you that question. You know, I think, David, we should offer a little bit of context. I mean, I think, as you know, I'm a longtime GTD devotee, and I think there are probably different levels. You've probably seen in practice there are different levels of adherence or different levels of belief in the theology, right?
Sure.
Different levels of practice. So I would say I'm not orthodox. I'm somewhere, you know, maybe I'm somewhere between I'm reform or conservative. But
you've at least been dipped.
Yes, exactly. Now here we have a tweet. Forgive me for we have a tweet saying that pulsating nerve center sounded like the beginning of a wiener joke, and I'm just going to ignore that tweet. I'm not going to talk
right
about that. But the thing is, I think with the thing with GTD, I think let me try to rephrase it here. The core thing to realize, you're sort of tool agnostic because the tools matter less than the central idea, and the central idea is get stuff out of your head into a system. Close those open loops. And how you do that is less important than that you do that. Does that seem like an accurate account?
Correct. And not only do you need to get it out of your head, but you need to clarify what it means. So collecting them and then clarifying what exactly you're going to do about them is something that only, you know, you can do it with paper and pen. You can collect the idea, and only your brain can figure out what you're going to do about mom's birthday. You know,
right.
No computer can do that. And until you make those decisions, then anything, any kind of personal organization or personal system is nothing but an incomplete list of still unclear stuff, which doesn't work at all. And that's why most planners and most organizing tools just don't work. They just suck wind like crazy because they're
right.
Incomplete. You don't trust them. Every time you look at them, you say, damn, there's still decisions I haven't made about stuff on there. I don't have time to think and decide right now. Get out of my face. And that's the truth of the way most people actually work with a personal system. So what I uncovered was you've got to get, first of all, get it all out so that you know it's all externalized, and then you need to be very discreet about each thing and decide what exactly that is. That am I going to do something about that? And what is there some outcome I'm committed to about that? And if so, what's the next step? And those are the kind of self-management decisions that you need to make first. Once you do that, then you're going to collect a whole lot of projects and a whole lot of action reminders and a whole lot of stuff that you do then need to put into some sort of system somewhere. But until you do those first two steps, the system doesn't matter.
Right. And I think that also the clarifying of the purpose is really important, at least for me. One of the great breakthroughs that I had in using this system was that is the idea of what do you want to accomplish? Like, what's the end game? What's the point of the exercise? And then also, what's the next action? That a lot of times, you know, let's say I'm working on a book. I can't put on my to-do list, write book. Okay. I mean, because it's so many different steps in there. And so what I have to think is, what's the desired outcome, I think is your phrase. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
So what's the desired outcome? And then what's the next step? And I think that actually helps people quite a bit. The other thing that really helped me is this idea of, and many times what we do is there are things that we are waiting for. And so what do you have, what kinds of things that are you waiting for? Because a lot of times you can't really do anything. Those kinds of questions really close that loop or relieve that thing or get it out of your head and recognize, hey, there's just a whole host of things that I'm waiting for. Anyway, David, for some reason, even though we're encouraging people to go on the phone lines, we have a few calls waiting here, but we got a couple of interesting questions coming in over the internet here. So I have one question from oh my God. Hey, Jerry is from Anguilla, BWI. BWI is not Baltimore or Washington International Airport. I think it's British West Indies. He wants to know, to what extent has GTD evolved to the current road warrior lifestyle?
Well, you know, a lot of my testing of GTD and developing of it was I was pretty much a road warrior myself. I mean, I've been on the road 200 to 300 days a year for 26 years.
Oh, man.
So that's pretty much one of the ways to test the metal of this was to make sure that kind of no matter where you were, you had sort of a virtual capacity to keep stuff out of your head and keep track of things, you know, as you move around. So I think the road warrior aspect of it is just, you know, one of those situations where you better have a good system because it can get nuts pretty fast. I mean, just receipts from taxi cabs will drive you insane if you don't have a place for all those. I don't know that there's any kind of magic
to that. We got another call coming in from the Pacific Northwest here. Let's take some calls. I'm monitoring Twitter feed. It looks like a couple of folks are having a problem getting in. But here we have. Let's go to Seattle. We have several people from Seattle, but it's the person from Seattle whose phone number ends in 50. Person from Seattle whose phone number ends in 50. Mr. or Ms. 50 from Seattle, you're on the air with David Allen.
Hi, my name's Austin. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Austin. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Austin.
Hey, So I got turned on to GTD a couple of years ago by a very good friend of mine, and it's really to a lot of extents the reason that not only am I'm actually still in business, but also that I'm still relatively sane. But I had a follow-up question for you, David, on your comment just a minute ago, where you hit on one of my personal roadblocks to really being as diligent about the system as possible. And that is that if entering information, commitments and tasks and those sorts of things into the system is too complex, it's just not something you're going to use when things get crazy. And that's been something that I struggle with just on an ongoing basis. And your comment that I had a question on specifically was you actually broke that down into two different pieces in terms of getting the task into the system. The first one was actually capturing the task or the commitment itself. And then the second piece was deciding if and how to proceed and giving it a due date if necessary, tying it to an outcome, getting some clarity of purpose, those sorts of things. Do you actually have those as separate pieces in your system, or when you're entering something into your system, do you try and assign all of that stuff to the task at the time that you enter it?
Oh, seldom. You know, I move too fast. For the most part, most of the things I collect, I want to wait until I get into executive mode where I can sit down and then decide to process them. So a lot of my collection is just truly scribbling on a notepad I carry in my wallet. And, you know, I probably throw away 80 or 90% of what I think might be meaningful, but don't force me to determine what that meaning is. Now, sometimes it's pretty evident. You know, gee, I want to call somebody and I know it's a call. I'll go right to my list of calls to make and put it in there. So in a sense, I'm capturing and processing and organizing all in one fell swoop. But for the most part, input and capturing input's a very different modality of thinking than sitting down and thinking about what things mean in a more proactive way. So those are very separate things. They're very separate behaviors. They're very, very separate best practices. And you also need very separate tools. You need very different tools for collecting than you have for organizing. That's one of the biggest problems most people have is they haven't teased those apart.
Right.
And they think that getting organized is the same thing as just dumping stuff out of your head. It's not at all. That's why people don't want to dump stuff out of their head, because there's still decisions and thinking required before you actually know what to do with it and where to put it. Because organization simply means that where something is matches what it means to you. But the problem is you have to decide what things mean to you. And boy, I guarantee you that a lot of the stress is not from information overload, it's potential meaning overload.
Mm.
Things that might mean something, but you haven't decided exactly what that is. That's why email is such a bear, is because it's not real clear what all those emails mean.
Exactly.
And therefore, some part of you knows there's a lot of thinking and decision-making you need to make about those before you know what the hell to do with them. So you've got
gotcha.
To tease those behaviors apart.
Okay, thank you very much for that. I appreciate that.
Awesome,
that's very, very helpful. I actually had one more real quick follow-up. What's the frequency that, you know, you use that term CEO mode. What's the frequency that you're actually in that mode? I mean, is that just like on a daily basis, just to look over the stuff you entered the day before, sort of at the beginning of the day, or is that weekly review territory, or how often do you find yourself in that mode to go from taking the things you've captured and actually organizing them?
All of the above. You know, there's a little bit of kind of every day, kind of every night before, kind of looking at what's coming up, what's the hard landscape, and that you kind of can't help doing that thinking. But the real key is the weekly review. Once a week, you got to carve out 1 to 2 hours where you just step back and sort of bring up the rear guard and pull it all together. If you do that, you don't need to do that much during the week. I mean, as I kind of joke, but it's almost true, I think about once a week. You know, because that's plenty. I mean, most people are thinking about how they should be thinking about what they should be thinking about, and they never actually finish the exercise.
Exactly.
Sit down and do that, then you can trust your intuitive judgments and then just move a lot more spontaneously and a lot more quickly, knowing that you've got that safety net that's going to pull it back together.
Right. And the central insight to me, again, you know, just sort of translating a little bit for the folks who are not, you know, who have not drunk all the Kool-Aid here on GTD is this idea of getting stuff out of your head and into any kind of system and a way to capture it. And our first caller, I mean, I'm a big fan of paper still. I carry around a little notebook. If you look at my office here, I have a lot of paper, but there is something resembling a system for processing, for processing that paper. Okay. So I think we've got a call. It's the international stuff is eluding us a little bit, but I think we have, Rini. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who is somewhere in the Netherlands. Rini, are you on the line? Rini? I guess not. Let's try this one. Rini, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly well. I can hear you like you're in Holland.
Yes, I am. I am. Not in Amsterdam, but it's close.
Where in Holland are you?
I'm Gouda at the moment.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Gouda, from the cheese.
Oh, G-O-U-D, Gouda, like what we from Ohio call Gouda.
Yeah, exactly, that's where I am at the moment.
It's pronounced, wait a second, this is actually a bit of a revelation for me as a guy who grew up in the Midwest and who every summer went to the Ohio State Fair, which I should point out to all you listeners in Texas, is the world's, the country's largest state fair. Texas tries to make that claim, but Ohio is easily the biggest state fair. And we used to go when I was a kid to this, the dairy pavilion there. And even though Ohio is not a huge dairy state, they did have Gouda cheese there. But now I know after almost 5 decades of living that it's pronounced Gouda.
Yes, of course. But, you know, it's the Dutch way of pronunciation, so maybe we should adapt to yours.
You know what? As an American, I think that's just a good system in general. So and okay. That's basically been our foreign policy for 100 years. But anyway, I digress. Thanks for calling in from Gouda, Netherlands.
Yes.
What's your question?
Yeah, my question to David is, in the Netherlands, it's quite strongly working in the software industry using Scrum. And I don't know if you've heard about Scrum, but it's invented by Jeff Sutherland and Ken Schwaber. And just recently, when I showed it to one of our customers, he was a manager, so not really into software. He said, hey, but how does Scrum difference from getting things done from Dave Allen? So I tried to explain it, but now...
Let's take a step back, and why don't you explain... Now, Scrum, you're talking about Scrum as it applies to agile software development, is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah, why don't you just give us a one-minute kind of explanation of what that... what makes agile different from other forms of software development and how the Scrum figures in there? Because it's actually very interesting for those of you who are interested in team, how teams operate a little bit and how people get feedback, et cetera. So give us a 1 minute, 2 minute tutorial.
Okay, well, it's quite easy. Traditional software development is done plan-driven, so you make a big plan for a long period, and then everything changes, and you have to adapt all the time. Well, Scrum just accepts all these changes, so what you do is you try to make your product in small iterations, which are always done, and you can bring it to the market as soon as possible. So yeah, then you prioritize on value, and you deliver your software faster. And let's say because of the short iteration and time boxes, the developers can produce something of value. And because of the cycles, you have a daily cycle and a two-weekly cycle and then a release cycle, you really get focused on the value and you deliver your software fast and of high quality because you don't change that much. And when there's changes or when there's emergencies or where there's improvements, you can respond to them because you prepared yourself for changes instead of trying to keep them away from you.
Okay, and so tell me how that relates to getting things. I guess your question is, how does that relate to getting things done?
Yeah, exactly. So I was wondering whether David L. is aware of Scrum, if he's seen Scrum, and because I gave this manager my answer on how GTD and Scrum are related or are different, and I was wondering.
What's your answer, Rini?
My answer was that, let's say, GTD is more on the personal and individual level, and Scrum makes it work for teams. But that's, let's say, maybe a little bit high over. But it brings focus on value stuff and finishing stuff. So it's not of having all these things happening around you, but like making sure what's important, get that done, bring that to the market, and then move on to the next.
Well, let me add what the very interesting part of that, and I'm not an expert in Scrum or Agile, but there certainly are a lot of GTD fans who are that I've heard about it. So I know enough about it to be dangerous. And I would say
the perfect guest.
Yes, probably the most fundamental way that they're the same is what GTD does is map to the way reality is, which says plan as little as you can get by with, have a direction, and what you want to do is keep all of the options out in front of you, and moment to moment have the discipline to make intuitive good choices about what to do and be ready to change those as required, as opposed to overstructuring your life. So that's a lot of the similarity, I think, of those two approaches, which is, a lot of, as we say, ready, fire, steer. You know, get going and then course correct and don't try to overbuild whatever that you're doing. And that's both personal as well as organizational. So, by the way, a very good friend and a big GTD champion is Frode Odegaard, who is head of the Lean Software Institute. And Frode and I are generating a white paper on GTD and Lean. And he's someone who's been informing me about how much they are similar in terms of just eliminating waste, eliminating overburdening structures, so that you can move much more fast and much more rigorously. In a way, it's a lot more relaxed and yet a lot more disciplined, because you have to be constantly on, and you can't let yourself rest on your laurels of having planned too much. So it's an interesting comparison.
Okay. Yeah, but then because in Scrum you have these sprints of 2 weeks in which the team produces a product, and in many cases I encounter managers said, how can you produce something valuable in 2 weeks with a small team? And then I always point them to the FedEx day, and actually one of the companies I work with, they just did a FedEx day in let's say the team of 10 produced 4 working products overnight. And then
wow.
I say to the management, look, if a team of 10 produces 4 working products overnight, imagine what they can do in 2 weeks if you just get out of the way.
Fantastic. Sure. Randy, one more question for you. What's one thing that David should do in Amsterdam before he leaves?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
What's one thing David should do in Amsterdam before he leaves? And just keep in mind that this is a family program.
Okay, yeah. Well, to be honest, there is very close to the area that you're referring to, there is a restaurant called De Waag, the weighing scale, in fact, which is a restaurant, which is a beautiful building standing on a market square, and it's a restaurant inside. But on the top floor of that restaurant, that was in the old days where people were cutting open the bodies to examine how the bodies were built up. And Rembrandt actually made a picture of that situation in that building. So actually, one thing that I always like to do to bring foreigners over there, and we have some nice food to eat, and they've all seen the Rembrandt painting. And then you imagine that actually happened on the place that you are then at that moment.
All right.
Restaurant De Waag is to be recommended.
A great restaurant, a little bit of Rembrandt, and the images of cadavers. What could be a finer way to spend your time?
Exactly.
Thank you, Ronan. All right. Thank you, Ronan, for calling in all the way from Amsterdam. We got a bunch of calls lined up here. I just want to say, just give folks a little bit of context here. Actually, agile software development is very interesting for a whole host of reasons, including its connection to GTD. But one of them is how self-directed the teams are. One of the problems with traditional software development is you basically have a manager, quote-unquote, in charge, basically telling people what to do. And that's not how people do their best work. And in agile, the teams are much more self-directed. The peers give each other feedback, and therefore they can iterate a lot faster. And the connection that Ronan was making to Rini was making to FedEx Days is something that I wrote about in my book Drive. And FedEx Days are these companies, it's really an idea that's spreading. It's unbelievably cool, where on, say, a Thursday afternoon, a company will say, hey, team, go work on anything you want. Do it whatever you want, however you want. The only thing we ask is that on Friday afternoon, you show what you've created to the rest of the team. So 24 hours to do whatever the heck you feel like, as long as it's not part of your regular job. It was started by an Australian company called Atlassian. And this has been – and they call it FedEx Days because you have to deliver something overnight. And this has been just an incredible source of innovation in new products, in refining products, and also in processes. So it's a really great connection that Rini's making there. We got a call here from let's go to West Chicago, Illinois. West Chicago, Illinois. You're on the air with David Allen.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yep. Wonderful. A big fan of both of you fellas. So,
well, thanks so much. Tell us your first name.
I'm Greg.
Greg.
And
what is West Chicago? Is that a
suburb? It's
out,
actually, it's just the suburbs of Chicago. So it's the Fox Valley, so sort of Naperville-ish, if you're familiar.
Oh, Naperville. And Naperville would be Illinois' second largest city.
I think so. I think that's right, Dan.
Oh, no. I know so, Greg. Okay.
Okay.
I'm telling you. All right. Naperville is the second largest city in Illinois. I know that because I tend to know these kinds of things. Anyway, what's your question?
Well, I just, again, thanks for doing this. And,
sure thing. It's a pleasure.
Thought leaders for the 21st century, to be sure. But I guess just a quickie here. Dave, 150 items on the next action list. Does that still seem about right?
Yeah, that's pretty standard for most professionals that we coach or work with, somewhere between 150 and 220.
Okay. You don't think that's actually
is that David, is that an ideal number, or is that just how it works out? That is, if you get
it works out. There's no right or wrong about it. It just tends, you know, just that it seems to be some sort of a kind of bakes down to that. You know, most people have 30 to 100 projects, mm-hmm. given the broad definition of a more than one step thing you're committed to finish within a few weeks or months. And those all have actions, and you'll have a lot of single actions that you need to take at any point in time. And by the way, you can only do one of them at a time, so it doesn't matter whether you have 3 million or 12. It's just nice, you know, because you can only do one anyway.
Yeah.
Frankly, if you only had 12, they all might suck. So it'd be, you know, you really want a lot of options, like going to a supermarket.
So, David, do you actually have mind like water? Is this sort of crazy age of every imaginable distraction coming at us even tearing you apart, or do you actually? Because I've been doing thing.
It's all relative. The clearer you get, the more that you take on weird, strange, and ambiguous stuff. So, you clear the deck so that you can then deal with the next karma that's emerging for you to deal with. So. I know how to get there. So whether I get there or not, it's just whether I'm too lazy to do my own stuff.
Right, but David also
here's the weird zen about it, Daniel. Come on, you know, once you sort of catch this, then you actually can be actually fairly cool about having a stressed out head. you go, that's all that is. And you know, if you know you can fix it, you kind of, you know, then who cares? You know, what the heck? That's just what that is. So
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, having met David in person, there is a kind of an equanimity about you. You know, there is a kind of mind-like water to David in person, that if you experience him face-to-face, you're like, God dang, this guy, you know, I remember last time I talked to David in person, he actually came over to our house here in Washington, D.C., and for a bottle of wine, and he actually quickly took that bottle of wine and left. But then when he came, he came over. You know, I always go, anybody who's had the misfortune of seeing me in person, I always have like a big bag schlepped over my shoulder and newspaper clippings falling out of my pockets. And David came over not carrying a thing. He had his evening module with him, and it was nice. It kind of calming in a contagious way. So, I think his mind is pretty clear, or he doesn't do anything. So,
I know that's not the case.
All right. So, thanks so much for the call from West Chicago. Remember, folks, if you have a question for David, question about anything, it doesn't have to be about GTD. It could be about anything that's on your mind right now. Sports, music, romance, food. My wife, who is operating the control board right here, when I said romance, she just winced. So I definitely think we need a call about romance so we can get that wince look back here. We got a caller from the great town of Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, David and Daniel?
It's good. Tell us your first name.
This is Matt.
Matt, all right. Matt, press star 2 to ask a question. And you can be just like Matt if you press star 2. So, Matt, what's your question?
Exactly. You can be just like the cool kid. Gets lucky.
Sure.
So, question. I often find myself spending way too much time getting all these different tasks and priorities from different places. And I spend way too much time, like, actually processing it versus, like, just getting stuff done and doing work. Do you ever find yourself having to drop the system and just get stuff done?
Interesting question.
Oh, sure.
Good.
Absolutely. Good. You know, the whole point of doing the system is so that you're getting the right things done and you're feeling on your game. But you do need to spend as much time as you need so that you're doing the right thing and you feel on your game. And you just need to spend as long as you need to do that. So, you know, I think it takes a good hour a day just to deal with all the incoming stuff coming at you that you do then need to process that. And, you know, that takes time and energy to think and make decisions, and that's required to define what it is you need to do. So you just need to take as much time as you need to so that then you feel on. But believe me, you know, if you just spent an hour really figuring out what to do and then go do it, the rest of the 7 or 8 hours of your day are going to be really top quality. If you don't spend that hour, you're going to be in the busy trap because you're feeling out of control and unfocused.
Exactly.
And you could be busy like crazy. So you want to make sure that even if you spent 7 of your hours getting ready, that last hour is going to be damn good and probably better than if you spent 8 hours just trying to be busy.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I often felt bad because I was taking so much time to process, but that makes sense, especially for the long run.
Processing is deciding what this stuff means and what it means to you. That is your work.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, that's actually
awesome.
Really.
Well, that's all I have. I was going to try and think of a romance question, but you got to me so fast.
Well, that's kind of romantic.
I figured from Atlanta. Where in Atlanta do you live?
In the Vinings area.
Oh, okay.
Around Cumberland, 285-75.
Okay, so no, I just figured, since I was pining for a romance question, I went to the American South. I didn't feel like the guy from Framingham, Massachusetts, would be able to give us anything good on that. So,
come on, Dan. Let's reframe what Matt just talked about. I mean, let's talk about romance. Let's talk about processing time versus, you know, execution time.
Okay, so, David Allen, go with that. Go with that.
I just did.
Okay, that's it. Okay, but I do think that there is Matt. Thanks a lot for your question. It's a really, really good question. It's actually made me think because there are times a couple of things. When I've sort of fallen off the wagon a little bit, and I've just had to crank something out, and I feel like I've been betraying the cause somehow. But the other thing is really that importance of preparation. And I've just seen so many people. It's really quite alarming that busyness is in some ways almost like a source of soothing narcotic for people. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is one of either just turning to toast or being in the busy trap are just usually the symptoms that you're feeling out of control and unfocused.
Yeah.
And you can really get addicted to that feeling, interestingly enough.
Yeah. I also think that there is that kind of dopamine rush when you do things for the sake of being busy. But I think the other thing that comes out of that and out of Matt's question is that in some ways you avoid dealing with the big questions. So things like, what is the expected outcome here? What is the point of this exercise? What do I want to accomplish? It's better simply, especially inside of an organization, oh my God, I got so much to do. I got to answer this, you know, and be soothed by that and not really confront the big questions, some of which, not to get fancy on you, some of which are existential questions. Because when you start thinking about what matters, what's the purpose of exercises, you start thinking at some deeper level about what's my life about.
Sure. Well, as someone appropriately said, don't just do something, stand there.
excellent advice. I'm going to try this idea of 7 hours of preparation and 1 hour of work. That's a fascinating idea. Okay, folks, remember it's *2. If you have a question, we've got, all kinds of people here on the line listening in. But I have before we get to them, who, remember, hit *2, just like Rinny and Matt and all the great people. Strangely, I don't know why we haven't – I can't identify gender on our state-of-the-art control panel here. But we don't have any questions from women. That's a little bit disappointing. So if you're a woman or if you sound like a woman, *2 is how you ask a question. Here we have somebody is actually tweeting that there isn't a question from a woman. Who is this here? This is Karen, or Karen, depending on how Swedish you want to pronounce it. Karen from Richmond Hill, Ontario, is tweeting that it's time for a question from a woman. I think you might be our woman, Karen, because maybe some of these other folks are women. In any event, I have a question of my own. Forget about women. Let's talk about me. Here's the thing that people have a hard time understanding, David. I know you've gotten this question before, but one of the things that has been – there have been a few kind of transformative moments in my life. As I look over my life, things that really transformed things. One of them was
getting married, marry my wife. Another one was going to leaving traditional work to go work for myself. And then probably the third most significant thing was buying a labeler. Why is that so important? I can't express to people when I tell them how much I love my labeler, but can you explain why labelers are so important?
Well, I think there are a lot of native tribes out there that won't tell you their name because they think if you have their name, you have power over them.
Mm.
So think about it. You name it, you own it. You don't name it, it owns you. So think about walking by. Do you have any binders, by the way, Dan, that still don't have labels on their spines?
A couple of them, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if, as soon as you label a spine, you'll walk by and realize there's a part of you that relaxes that wasn't relaxed before.
I think that's what
because
it is.
Every time it wasn't called what it is,
yeah, that's
it says it keeps going, what is that? What is that? What is
fantastic.
That? What does that mean? What does that
fantastic.
Mean?
Fantastic. Fantastic. It's more than simply writing something down on, say, a file folder, because I have file folders at the wazoo. It's more than simply writing stuff down. But there's something about that label that sort of says, okay, I've dealt with this. Fascinating point. Let's go. It looks like I'm guessing that we have a woman on the line. We have a lot of people on the line, and I think, based on some other data that's coming into our command center here, that this person is a woman. We're going to go to what looks to be Baytown, Texas. Baytown, Texas. You're on the air, Baytown.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Marie.
Hey, Marie. Thanks for calling in.
I'm a woman.
You know what?
Children.
Given your name and the sound of your voice, our computers picked up on that immediately.
There you go.
So what's your question, Marie?
It's not really a romance question, although as I think you pointed out, sometimes that's a matter of not having enough time. But I wanted to ask about, this is maybe an odd question, but I recently found out that I have ADD, and I really do. It's not a made-up thing. And my husband has ADD as well, though he has the more hyper sort of ADD. So he can work very hard, but he's very disorganized. And I'm disorganized too, but in a different way. And we have a lot of out of sight, out of mind syndrome. And also I think with ADD, you find that you want a silver bullet system that's going to work for you. And I'm wondering if you've had much experience with people like that.
Actually, Marie, I'm not an expert in that area. I have got a couple of people on my staff who are. But what's been inspiring over all the years is how a lot of the experts in ADD and a lot of the counselors who work in that field give my book to their patients.
Interesting.
Because they seem to have found that something about my system is just enough structure, but not too much, but just enough to make that the possibility that you can then capture and coordinate things in a way that works very much and supports, you know, not necessarily, you know, from my experience of it, it's a mistake to call it a disorder. It's just a different learning style and a different way that you process information. So it's nice to have, you know, what's the simplest, most elegant way that you can then give yourself a structure without having it be too structured for you. And I think making things visible, making things coherent, and making, you know, having a systematic approach is something that you know, someone who has that kind of attention syndrome finds extremely valuable and extremely powerful. I know it's been very life-changing for a lot of people.
Interesting. Marie, have you tried GTD?
I have not myself yet, but I actually tried to talk my husband into it because and talked to him quite a bit about it because he works for a corporation and is one of those busy, busy, busy people.
Yeah.
I'm self-employed and I'm trying to find systems that work for me, and it may work for me, but he has so much external pressure.
Interesting. Well, I encourage you to give it a try. Pick up the book, Getting Things Done. I think that's a really great, great guide to all this. Marie, thanks for your call. We're going to go now to Lexington, Kentucky, home of the University of Kentucky Wildcats. Lexington, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can. And it looks like you got some kind of wildcats in the background there.
Well, I'm actually calling you from the beach in North Carolina on vacation.
Oh, my God.
I have three kids around, and they are having fun in the pool. So I'm looking at a beautiful ocean.
Okay.
A great environment to listen to.
We're so glad you're listening in on your vacation. Tell us your first name again.
Kimmy.
And what's your question?
My question is, I just want the number one hint for restoring focus when you're busy and sort of getting in the groove and then you get distracted. Do you have sort of one hint or tip that you could give for sort of restoring that focus?
Okay, well, the number one hint for restoring focus. You know what? We're getting a little bit of a strange sound from your phone. I don't know whether it's the backsplash from the pool. But we're going to answer your question. But you take the answer off the air. Thanks a lot for calling in, David. Number one tip for restoring focus.
Boy, that's a good question.
You
know, it's very unique to the situation, I think. But, you know, as you know, usually what's distracting you are things that you haven't captured.
Exactly.
And so if you really want to be able to focus, what you need to do is to get out of your head what's distracting you. So start to pay attention to what's distracting and holding your attention hostage and write it down, park it somewhere that you know you'll get back to it again. So paying attention to what has your attention is important. You want to be able to control your attention and not have it held hostage, but the very first step is to make sure that you identify what's pulling on you. The reason it has your attention is because you haven't put appropriate attention on it yet. So, you know, cat food or God or your sister or your relationship will keep bugging you simply because you haven't put the appropriate attention on it yet. So your first thing you got to do is identify that.
Get it out of your head.
And then walk it through the process.
Yeah. I think that's good. I think coupled with that sometimes is the question, at least for me, is the question of, okay, you know, what's the point of this exercise? Like, what do I want to accomplish? What does the outcome look like? And a lot of times that can be clarifying. It's less clarifying if you don't get all the other sort of detritus, out of your head. And we're looking at the Office Hours Twitter stream here. And I think this is Marie who is tweeting here, and she's saying, thanks for answering my question. I actually ordered David's book from Amazon before I made the call. So,
cool.
Yeah, so what that means, of course, David Allen, is that you owe me a buck in royalties. Let's go to we got a caller from Chicago here. We have several Chicago listeners. Chicago, in your phone line is – Your phone number ends in the numbers 423. Chicago, 423. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. It's such a pleasure to speak with you both. My name is Karina, and I am a woman.
Karina, that's excellent. My name is Karina, and I am a woman. All right. I like that lead-in. What's your question, Karina?
My question is that beginning the process of capturing, organizing, and clarifying, and then deciding is easy for me to get really excited about and to jump into. But then after a couple of weeks or even a month, that enthusiasm and momentum falls off. So my question is, do you have any advice to keep the momentum, the enthusiasm, and the discipline on going?
Yes, keep it going.
Mm.
Now you just got to keep coming back on. You'll fall off. It's easy to fall off. It's easy to get back on. So what you have to do is once a week, sit down, give yourself an hour, and pull up the rear guard. Just come back to it. It's not hard. You just need to just don't give up. Keep coming back. At some point, you will feel like doing it and feel like you'll feel uncomfortable if you don't do it. But you have to keep just revisiting it until that becomes a habit.
Excellent.
That makes sense. I think, I mean, again, as someone who is, not a GTD expert by any stretch of the imagination, but someone who is, you know, who's trying to work with its principles, I think the answer to your question, as David is saying, is in some ways the weekly review. I have found that if I fall off the wagon, and which I've done many times on the weekly review, that's when things go awry. And that weekly review is really key. And one thing I've done to help enforce that is just a tactical move is, I'm honoring it actually as much in the breach as in the observance these days, but, is putting it onto my calendar on a Friday afternoon for a certain time And a lot of times with me, you know, there's a sort of automaticness that I see something in my calendar and it comes up on the calendar, I just do it because that's what I'm supposed to do. I don't have to think. And if I put the weekly review on my calendar for, say, Friday at 3 o'clock from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, I often will do it. And there's a great feeling at the end of that hour that my life isn't nearly as much of a mess as I thought it was.
Excellent.
Yeah, building rituals like that is great. You know,
yeah.
I very much applaud, you know, Tony Schwartz's work in that and how he's publicized the idea of building rituals in that.
Yep.
I think that's so critical.
Yep. Well, we are creatures of habit. We can either be really good habits or really bad habits.
Amazingly enough, we're at the end of our hour here with David Allen. David, thank you for being such a terrific guest. Thanks to Tim Grawl in Lynchburg, Virginia, Jessica Lerner here at Pink Inc. World Headquarters in Washington, D.C. Thanks to all of you for listening. Please tune in next month, July 12th, when our guest, our very special guest, will be Bob Sutton, the author of The No A-Hole Rule, the author of Good Boss, Bad Boss, and a professor at Stanford University. For all of us here, thanks for listening. You've just listened to Dan Pink's Office Hours. You can hear our previous episodes and check out our upcoming schedule of guests at www.danpink.com/officehours. Thanks for listening.